dire, the villagers, they understand the importance of the elephants and they understand the importance of catching the poachers. But it does get frustrating when you've got all of these mango trees getting raided by elephants in your village that you needed. So this was a solution that they said, okay, we still want to make sure that the public remains on our side. So they took the initiative and started building these electric fences to keep them out. And when I was there and I was talking to the villagers, they were saying, yes, this is working. We like this. So that was definitely a success story there too. Again, something that was very proactive by the Gabonese government that I was able to see, you know, as an aside, as I was going through the village one day.
Carla, let me talk to you about the Pentagon officials that you interacted with while you were there in Gabon. What were some of their major takeaways after the training and pieces of advice and mentoring? What were some of their major takeaways that he spoke to you about?
Well, the small team really enjoyed the opportunity to be able to share their knowledge. I mean, let's talk about the entire military presence. The U.S. military presence in Africa is spread out. I mean, the bulk is in Djibouti, the Camp Lemonnier area. There's about 4,000 there, but there are 6,000 U.S. troops spread throughout Africa. And so once you get out of the Djibouti area, then you've got several hundred in Somalia, Kenya, that area fighting al-Shabaab. Then you have the group of several hundred in West Africa, in the Niger, Burkina Faso area, fighting Boko Haram and the Islamic extremists there. I think DOD just issued a few months ago saying that there were about 25 Islamist extremist groups across Africa. But so once you get past that part, then you have small teams going out and doing nation building activities and basically going to countries and saying, okay, what do you need from us? Because we're not here to tell you what you need to do. We need to know what you need. And some countries have asked for help with rule of law. How do the military and the civilian governments work together? Well, when it came to Gabon said, you know, we really have a problem with poaching. And is there some way that we can work together where you can help us with poaching? And Gabon actually wasn't the first. It started a little over a decade ago in Tanzania. And they've also done counter-poaching activities in Uganda, Botswana, Chad, Malawi. So this has gone on for many years, and it's gone on with several iterations in countries all across Africa. The concern that I have as a reporter is that I was part of one of the last counter-poaching activities because of coronavirus. So I was there in Gabon. There was also another one going on in Uganda that I think wrapped up in March or April of 2020 of this year. And then there haven't been any activities because the U.S. military has not been going out and doing those small activities like they used to. In fact, the big activities this year were also canceled in several areas as well. I was going to be embedded in Morocco on this big African lion exercise, and that was canceled. And they had to tell us a couple weeks before that at first they were going to try to make it smaller, and then they decided that they would continue with some of the activities they had initially already started, but then everything else was canceled until next year. So we really don't know what's going to happen in the coming months as coronavirus has continued to surge in countries like the United States and in Europe, which is where U.S. Army Africa is based, which is where AFRICOM is based. So we have to wait and see. And I am curious, Mr. Minister, if coronavirus has increased or decreased the amount of poaching that you've seen.
Actually, I don't think we've really seen any change in poaching activity. The COVID-19 hasn't been as virulent in Central Africa as it has in other parts of the world. I think partly because of the climate, it's hot and humid, and the virus doesn't do so well in hot, humid conditions. We have a very young population, which helps. And I think there's a certain amount of natural resistance because there are so many other coronaviruses in the wildlife here. And so we've not really been hit by kind of severe health issues in the Congo Basin. Obviously, the economy is down, which for some kind of tourist economies has been a severe impact on poaching because it's tourist revenues that fund the poaching, the anti-poaching work, and a lot of people, kind of tourist workers who are now out of work, without a job and are struggling to feed their families have been resorting to poaching just to keep going. And so the fact that we don't have a major tourism industry in Gabon and the rest of the Congo Basin means that we haven't fallen foul to that issue. And so we have continued to work more or less as normal. And unfortunately, the poachers also. So it's sort of a status quo, really.
Mm. So, Minister White, you talked about the political will. Talk to me about the budgetary allocation for your ministry in order to, one, pay the Echo Guards very well, because just like the military, they are faced with sometimes very acute danger. And two, the equipment they need as part of this counter-poaching measures that your administration has launched.
Sure. Well, the government covers all of the salaries of the Echo Guards and some basic operational costs. You wouldn't say they're rich, but they're being paid salaries of about $500 to $600 a month on average, which is a reasonable salary in the African context. In addition to the money that the government puts in, then we have a lot of partners. One of our big partners is U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. That whilst we're paying for the salaries and the basic costs, they come in and help us with equipment and operations costs. And so what we try to do is we have a philosophy whereby we should be doing 50%, but that we feel that it's perfectly reasonable to ask the rest of the world to help us with the other 50%, given the incredible ecosystem services that the Congo Basin forests are providing to the planet.
So what are the prospects of the relationship between the U.S. military and the Gabonese Echo Guards, particularly after the coronavirus is dealt with?
I mean, we'd certainly like to see the U.S. military back. We find that these training sessions, in addition to the technical aspects where they're, we're not being trained to kill people, but we're being trained not to get killed. Basically, it's more self-defense than aggression, but we are very much encountering situations where poachers will shoot on sight, where Kalashnikovs and 458s are being directed towards our teams, and so they definitely do need to know, how to behave in order to minimize the risks and what to do when they are being shot at and how to respond to that. So that helps a lot. But also just the kind of the morale boost of this exchange with other, with military folk, with having the US government come in and show that we are together and that we are supported in this battle, and that this battle is not just important for Gabon, but important for the rest of the world, is a great morale boost as well to our teams.
Mm. Carla, so what was it like for you in bed with the U.S. military, crisscrossing the forest, them, showing you some of the activities of the poachers, seeing it firsthand, and what were some of the takeaways for you?
I loved it. I wish I could have stayed longer. I mean, you can get past the mosquitoes and the possibility of stepping on a snake. If you can get past that, that was a little squirmy for me. But just seeing these majestic creatures, I'll never forget the first time that I was able to see the elephants. And I was so close, and I wanted to just get as close as I could. And I remember somebody telling me, there's a baby, one of the elephants, it looked like it was a mother and a baby. And they said, there's a baby, so don't charge up there. Even though we were far distance, they said, don't try not to make any sudden movements, because this is the one time where the elephants are probably more squirmish because they want to protect their baby. But that, it was just so fascinating to me personally. I had seen elephants, of course, you know, we have zoos in the United States, and I had seen elephants up close when I had gone to Sri Lanka, but never in their natural habitat like that, just, you know, hanging out in the wild, doing what they do. And it was just fascinating for me. And I can tell you that the U.S. military team that I embedded with, they loved it as well. This is something that everybody who has a part of it in the U.S. military has loved and has advocated for. The problem is budget cuts and the budget situation with the military. And because U.S. Africa Command is such a small command, you know, you've got such big problems in the Middle East. You've got to shift towards the focus with a potential fight against China in the Pacific or Russia in Europe. Africa often gets forgotten a little bit because there is such a small presence there. And the concern is that because these teams are small, 3-4 person teams when they go out, that these activities could be cut in the future when they have to prioritize. Do we need to help with counter poaching, or do we need to help with the fight against the Islamic extremists here, you know, in Somalia, for example, or in Niger? So that is a big concern that I know that people in Africa Command are going to be watching carefully. And I will be watching as well. I keep asking, you know, are there any more activities going on? Because we just have to wait and see where the funding goes. And this, for me, was a very long process. I actually started talking about counter-poaching activities with officials at the Pentagon in 2016. And I had wanted to go for years, and there was a North Carolina National Guard team that was supposed to be going in 2017, and then that got canceled because of funding priorities. So even before coronavirus, even before there were these shifts going on with the Trump administration wanting to shrink the presence in Europe and in Africa, before all that, there were already these kind of hints that there could be cuts. So we really are going to have to watch and see, because this is something that has been proven to be effective. The minister can agree with me there, I'm sure, that they have seen positive results because of this training. And it's a very small thing to do. It doesn't cost a lot of money, but it does kind of fall as one of the last priorities that the U.S. military is looking at.
Minister White, can you comment?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that when, if you look at not just the poaching, but you look at kind of terrorism in Africa, it's been moving south through the continent over the last few decades. And the new frontier, you, obviously Boko Haram are in northern Nigeria, they're in northern Cameroon and so on. And so the next frontier is the Congo Basin forests. And investing in keeping them out will be so much more cost effective than trying to win back territory that has been lost. And as we look at the implication of terrorist groups in ivory and gold trafficking, as we look at, you know, the kind of the worrying increase in piracy issues out in the Gulf of Guinea, I think there's a lot to be said for investing ahead of the wave. And I think in Africa in particular, there's a very clear link between natural resource governance and peace and security. If you look across Africa, countries that have got a lot of elephants tend to be countries with stronger democratic processes, stronger governance. And the countries that have lost their elephants are the countries that have slipped into civil strife and civil war. And so that link between natural resource governance and stability is very, very clear across the African continent. And so investing in anti-poaching missions or investing in the fight against timber thieves or gold miners or illegal fishing is not just an investment in conservation in natural resources. It really is an investment in the long-term sustainability of the continent and in peace and security on the African continent, and in even in, you know, the issues of climate change. Because if you look at countries that have lost their elephants, they've also then lost their forests. And if you lose your forest, then that's a huge huge detriment to the fight against climate change. And so a country like Ivory Coast, named for the elephant, lost almost all of their elephants. They have about 50 left, I think, and they're down to 3% forest cover because they lost control of those natural resources. So let's work together to invest in maintaining the forest governance and keeping those forests and the wildlife intact, rather than trying to put things right once we've lost control.
But it's a way. What has been the reaction in terms of partnership with your international partners? How has been their reaction towards this anti-poaching effort that your administration is embarking upon?
I mean, we get strong support. Obviously, we're talking about U.S. military, but U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Forest Service, U.S. Park Service have all helped us over the years. U.S. Fish and Wildlife are still our biggest single donor. But we've also had engagement from the EU, from the British government have committed, and many of our military training sessions with the US Marines were joint sessions with British military as well. And so there are many partners. The Russian government last year provided guns and ammunition for the fight against anti-poaching. And so there are many partners out there who do see this link between poaching, natural resources, good governance, peace and security. And I think particularly because of that, and because the President Ali Bongo Ondimba, who was formerly a Minister of Defense, is so eloquent on these issues, I think we are getting some good support from many of our partners.
Carla, all in all, what was your take on your experience in Gabon with regards to the anti-poaching effort, with regards to the anti-mining effort to safeguard and protect the wildlife and safeguard the environment?
That's a great question. If I had to sum it up in one word, I would probably say hope. That was my biggest takeaway. There is a lot of hope in Gabon that what they're doing is going to be the thing that's needed for all of Africa, because, you know, as we discussed, they have the majority of the African forest elephant population. And if they can make it work, then hopefully they can help others to make it work as well. I know that everyone that I spoke to on the American side were also very hopeful that this would work. And they were hoping that they could keep everything up and keep the pressure on the poachers, because that, no matter if you're dealing with any sort of criminal activity, if they have pressure on them, then they cannot execute plans to attack elephants, attack people, steal money, launder money. There's the whole gambit of that. And so that is AFRICOM's top focus. It doesn't have to be a direct link to, it doesn't have to be shooting at an Islamist extremist. It could be preventing the poacher who has absolutely nothing to do, he thinks, with Islamic extremists. But the money that he's making, a piece of that goes up and goes up the chain and then does help these terror groups that are, you know, wreaking havoc on the populations, several of the populations across Africa. So that was my biggest takeaway. And it will be interesting to see in the coming years if hope can turn into more success, because as the minister has said, they're doing a great job, but it's still pretty terrifying when you look at the numbers of the elephants that are lost every month. And you think about how long it takes for these elephants to reproduce. It's not on our side. There's just a long process it takes for these elephants to reproduce and for more elephants to become available. So if you slow down at all, you're not helping the situation. So that's something that I think we will take away from this, is that the pressure needs to remain the hope needs to turn into action and more action as we continue to go through this fight for Gabon's forest elephants.
Mm. Professor White, a brief reaction to what Carla said.
I think that's very perceptive. I think there is hope. I think the fact that people are starting to understand, people in Gabon and elsewhere, and starting to understand these links between, exactly as she said it, that we don't have terrorists here from Mali, but some of our gold and ivory is going to Mali and ends up supporting those terrorist groups. And so I think the fact that the US government, the US military are standing shoulder to shoulder with us reassures us that people are taking this seriously. The fact that we have 50% of Africa's forest elephants in 10% of the rainforest, that's both a good and a bad message. It's a message of hope for Gabon. There's a similar message in northern Congo, but if you look at the rest of the African forest elephant range, we've lost 90% of the other forest elephants on this continent in the last 15 years. And so there is a very severe challenge. And it's a collective challenge. It's not something that the Congo Basin countries are going to be able to deal with all on their own, because it's really not a local problem. It's an international problem. It's an issue of international organized crime, and we have to fight it in that way. And I think whilst we talk more and more about wildlife crime being up there with drugs and human trafficking and so on, I still feel that the police forces of this world don't take it quite as seriously. And so my hope is that by putting the spotlight on it, that we will push governments and police forces to take wildlife crime more and more seriously. Perhaps not just because of the wildlife issues, but even the health issues. COVID-19, which is a wildlife health issue at its base.
Now, before we go, Professor White, pragmatically speaking, what are some of the benchmarks you want to see, or your administration wants to see, in terms of effectively carrying out some of the measures you implemented to say, all right, we're going the right way, or we're moving at the right pace?
I'd like to see ivory prices coming down through collective international effort, and that is the case. We've gone from ivory that was up to about $150, $200 a kilo down to about $25, $30 a kilo today. I want to see fewer gun battles, fewer exchanges of gunfire between my echo guards and poachers, because we've started to remove the threat of poaching and deal with the situation. I want to see fewer incidences of illegal forestry, because all of these illegal networks are linked. And so if they're making money off illegal timber or illegal gold, they're also going to make money off illegal ivory. I want to see even more kind of inter-administration collaboration within Gabon, and even more inter-governmental collaboration across the region, because we have to fight this regionally as well as locally.
Thank you very much. On that note, our distinguished guests are Professor Lee White and VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Thanks to our audience for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Peter Clotty. Join us next week.